The following episode was recorded in front of a live streaming audience on Saturday, October 19th, 2024.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name. Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or else media.
You're listening to the Superman Super Show, episode number 72, Mystery in Swayze Swamp. Hello and welcome to the Superman Super Show. I'm a host. My name is Steven. And 1,000 miles over there to my right is another host, Mr. Ed Moore.
Howdy, folks. How's it going? All you folks listening or not listening or will be listening in the past, future, present, whenever.
Yay. How's things?
Not too bad. This past week, it finally turned, the weather turned more towards what you would expect from an autumn upcoming winter kind of weather. It's been highs in the high 40s to low 50s, lows like freeze warnings at night, frost warnings. That is the kind of weather I prefer. Personally, being a fat boy, I prefer cooler weather. I'll just say that too. But a lot of my personal memories of goodness and happiness and stuff always seem to occur in the fall, winter times. So that's comforting when any given year kind of enters that realm also.
Yep. Yeah. I prefer this time of year as well. We had our first freeze warning, this week. So we've officially kicked on the furnace. It's not on right now because yesterday it got up into the mid 70s.
Oh.
It might do that again today. So,
right.
You know, it gets cold at night. It gets down to near freezing at night and then up to high 60s, mid 70s, and then back down. That's what Kansas does this time of year.
It's really cold when you first wake up in the morning, but if you do anything, it's going to get warm enough during the day that it'll get hot. So you don't want to do anything then. And yeah.
So it's like we kick the furnace up a little bit before we go to bed so that we don't wake up to super cold. But yeah, it's a nice thing about working at home is, you know, at some point in the morning, I can get up and just turn it off.
Right. Yeah, right. You can just handle it and not. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, if you got one of them smart houses with them smartphones, you can do that from anywhere.
Whatever. I guess. I only see that on TV. I don't think it exists like a lot of things. I don't think it's real.
All right. Well, we talked about the weather. That is a major banter category.
Yes, that is. Yes, that definitely qualifies as banter.
I was going to talk about a podcast I've been listening to, but now I can't remember which one it was because I've been listening to so many lately.
Was it the history one that you mentioned? The history of the 90s?
History of the 90s. No, I just started that one. Okay. I'm not deep enough into it to really form an opinion on it just yet.
Right.
I started listening to that one at the same time as I started listening to one about the 80s, and I got about 15 minutes into the one about the 80s and was just like, nah, this dude, no, I can't take, he's just, no, can't take him. He's just very monotone talking about stuff, and it's like, nah.
Yep.
He's talking about some very nostalgic things, but couldn't do it.
That's fine. You know, they're not all made for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. There are people that love that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, you start to get in any way excited or over the top or silly, and people are like, I can't listen to that nonsense.
You know? Yep.
So I have been listening. There's a guy who does a bunch of podcasts. His name is Lindsey Graham, and he's not the politician.
Oh, okay. I was going to say,
his website is actually notthatlindseygraham.com.
Okay.
And
okay.
But he does a lot of history podcasts. He does the Daily History Podcast, American History Tellers, American Scandal, and then one that he did before the last election that he brought back was now I can't remember. It's all about elections.
Okay.
It's each episode is starting from the very first election going up to the last election. Okay. That's each episode. So it's really interesting because the whole concept is he's like, you know, it seems like if you look at politics now and elections, you just think, oh my God, it's gotten so crazy. It's gotten so crazy and over the top. How did our country get to this? And it's like, it's always been like this, buddy.
Okay.
You know, let me tell you some stories.
You just didn't pay attention then.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's pretty good. I'm actually up to the first post 9/11 election between GWB and I think John Kerry.
That'd be 2004?
Something like that. Yeah. Got it right here.
Because 2001, right, was 9/11. So
American Elections, Wicked Game is the name of the podcast. Yeah. 2004.
Okay.
Bush versus Kerry. And the one thing that struck me the most about this episode is they play a clip of Bush's big post 9/11 speech, like right after 9/11 happens. And it's very, you know, it's very serious. It's all about the people who died and the, you know, all that stuff and the families and blah, blah, blah. And because of Will Ferrell and his George W. Bush impression, I cannot hear the real George W. Bush speak without picturing Will Ferrell. I guess I never realized how good that impression was.
Okay.
Because, you know, he doesn't, I mean, I guess he kind of looks like George W. Bush, but he's, you know, he's big and tall and Bush is not big and tall. I don't know. I'm listening to him speak in this episode and I'm like, oh my God, I'm trying not to laugh because all I can picture, I could just picture Will Ferrell going strategery, you know, just saying those crazy words and stuff. But yeah, it's because there's some podcasts. If you like history, check those out. The Legends of the Old West, the guy who does that and his other show, Infamous America, he's doing Mountain Men over on Legends of the Old West. So I listened to Jedediah Smith and Hugh Glass. And over on Infamous America, he just wrapped up his season about the Zodiac Killer, which is pretty good. He's got I tell you what, it's weird. He's got one season on Infamous America where he talks about a bank robbery in the 90s that was just this, it was in California, West Hollywood. I think it's called the West Hollywood bank robbery. The two guys who committed the robbery were just these big weightlifters and they came in body armor and automatic weapons and held the police at bay in this big shootout for hours. And I've listened to that season at least twice. There's just something about it that I keep going back and listening to it because it's the way he breaks it all down over like four or five episodes. It's really good.
Cool.
It's a really good story. Okay, I think we're bantered out. That was way too much banter.
No, not at all.
We've reached our banter quotient.
Limit the banter limit. The banter meter is it's pegged. Yeah. So it's
The banter meter is in the red.
Yeah.
It's almost off. It's almost off the
we
thing.
We need to bring it back. Let it calm down a little bit.
We about buried the needle. All right. So today we're looking at Mystery in Swayze Swamp. The mystery has nothing to do with Patrick or his brother, whose name I can never remember.
Sven.
Who's also an actor. What? Do you know his name?
Sven.
Is it? No, I don't think it's
Sven. No. Okay.
Sven Swayze. That's a great name.
Sven Swayze. Yeah.
I'm going to be really tempted when I'm editing this there. Every time I say Swayze, I can't help but think in my head, there's a line from How I Met Your Mother where somebody sees Patrick Swayze in a restaurant and they go, Crazy Swayze. And I'm going to fight my brain not to include that at any point in this episode.
Well, when you go to post, you can put a little clip of that at the end every time.
Yeah. Crazy Swayze. Anyway, Swayze Swamp, the mystery in Swayze Swamp is the third Superman story to appear in Superman number 9. It was written by Jerry Siegel with art by Paul Cassidy. Superman number 9 is a cover date of March/April 1941, but an on-sale date of January 3rd, 1941, and that comes from Mike's Amazing World of Comics over at mikesamazingworld.com. And here's what happened in the story. Lois Lane is sent to investigate an electric disturbance near Swayze Swamp, while Clark is sent to check on Lamson Laboratories, which has received several threats. When Lois arrives at the swamp, only a man named Tom Jepson will take her into the swamp. They find a meteor there, and Lois is kidnapped by Jepson and some men clad in metal masks. Clark is shot at by a plane as he visits Lamb's. I'm thinking of that scene,
it's true.
Clark is shot at by a plane as he visits Lamson. Lamson, what a crazy name, at his lab. More metal-clad men appear and force Lamson to turn over the formula for W-142, a powerful new energy source. Superman stops the man and learns from Krall, with a K, Krall, who is Lamson's assistant and a crook, that Lois has been captured. Superman races to the swamp, where he encounters the boss of the operation. The scientist uses a magnetic force against the Man of Steel, but Superman rescues Lois, and the crook is crushed in the carnage. Superman brings in Jepson and turns the story in as Clark Kent. Ed, are you able to wrap your mind around this story?
Wow. This actually, I thought both of these stories that we read for this recording were the most complex as far as the narrative and storylines I believe that we have seen yet. And it seemed like, you know, all of a sudden, the first, because these are the third and fourth stories in one anthology, Superman 9. The mm-hmm. first and second stories were nowhere near this complex. And then,
no, but they were still good, making Superman number 9 an excellent issue.
Yes, I think the best issue of the book so far.
Yeah.
But yeah, just all of a sudden, you know, they were the more typical kind of stories for 1 and 2. And then all of a sudden, 3 is this back and forth. And then 4 is the same thing, just with slight, you know, different names and different locations. And I'm like, man, what happened in the middle of putting together this issue that the story design changed so much?
They're 13 pages was just not enough to... I don't want to say they were not enough pages to tell the story, because I'm kind of glad they were able to do it in 13 pages because that made it a bit more crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's like they've tried to fit so much in those 13 pages. And we've seen it before. We've seen them really try to fill those 13 pages. But I think this one, yeah, they took it to a whole new level. And probably the whole time we're thinking to themselves, man, if only we had 22 pages.
Yeah, really. We should have cut one of the stories and made one extra mm-hmm. long. And yeah. But yeah, I mean, the way this starts out, you have we see two scenes. And then in essence, it comes together with Lois and Kent being separate, one going to check out one scene and one going to check out the other. And then in the midst of that, we have one scene resolve. And because that scene resolved, Superman has to go to the other scene, and it was very very complex. It wasn't complicated, I didn't think, but it was very complex.
There were a lot of moving parts.
Yeah,
and let me see if I can try to take everybody through this tale in a succinct way. But we start out in a place called Rovertown, which is a great name, at the Lamson Laboratories. And do we ever get Lamson's first name? I feel like they only call him Lamson throughout this entire story.
Yeah, no, not that I saw. It was always just the last name.
So we get these two scientists. They're in the laboratory. They're doing their experiments. One guy is pouring stuff from a beaker into another beaker and smoke's coming off of it. And they're talking about how Lamson has been receiving threats regarding his W-142 formula. And they're being, Lamson doesn't respond to threats. He's a tough guy. And then suddenly one of the scientists is just gunned down in the laboratory.
Yep.
We don't see who does it. We just see a hand come from off panel, blam, shoots him down. And then a part of the plant, they don't call it a laboratory at that point, but that evening, a portion of the plant explodes. So right away, not even off the first page, and it's really half a page because they devote half the page to the kind of the teaser mm-hmm. on what's going to happen.
Which actually does have something to do with the story.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not going to try to read that. I'll flub it all up. But we see the metal men, which just look freaking weird. There's just something unfinished about their faceplates that just make them look super weird. But cop shows up on the scene and we get our first A of the story. So they tried to get the formula from the safe, eh? And so that's what the explosion was. Somebody trying to blow up the safe to get the formula. We then go hundreds of miles away on the border of Swayze Swamp, this small little town where all their electronics are going all hooey. Some kind of electrical disturbance. Some guy goes up to the proprietor of a dry goods store. May I use your telephone, please? Won't do you any good. None of the telephones hereabouts have been in order for a week. And so that's when we get to the planet. right away, we get a sad, sad little version of Clark, who his first speech of the entire issue, "You know, Lois, last night I dreamed that you and I were on the best of terms." To which she responds, "It must have been a dream." That's so sad. Makes me feel for old Clark. But they're ushered into Mr. White's office. That's the bow tie boy who retroactively becomes Jimmy Olsen. So they're both given these two assignments. Lois is to go to Swayze Swamp to find out what's going on with the electrical disturbances. And Clark is to go to Lamson. So that's a hard word. Lamson Laboratories to find out what's up with this W142 formula and all the threats against the guy. Lois arrives out at Swayze Swamp. Let's kind of tell Lois' story first. Nobody will take her out into the swamp, but a stranger arrives who nobody in town knows. And his name is, what was his name?
Tom Jepson. Mm-hmm.
He just arrives on the scene. "I'll take you out into the swamp." And these other people who live in the town are like, "We don't even know you. We've never seen you around here before. You don't want to go out into the swamp with this guy. How does he know his way around?" And Lois is like, "Yeah, whatever. Nobody else will take me. I'll go with him." There's a very creepy moment between the two of them on the rowboat where she asks Jepson, "How long will it take us to reach the center of the swamp?" And his response is, "Maybe a few hours, maybe never." And she does not respond to that in any way. That, I think I'd be like, you can just drop me off over here.
Right here on this mound. Patch. I'll just get off right here. Yeah.
But she's listening to a portable radio. She gets a lot of static.
That's a big ass radio to be carrying around too.
Yeah.
Let me just say that, you know, that's as big as a smaller piece of luggage, but yet she's just toting it around. So she has a radio.
It's a boombox, you know, in the 80s, they were meant to be that big so they could be cool looking. But back then it's like, that's as small as they could get.
That's as small as they could make them.
But they reach a meteor that has formed an island in the swamp, a meteor that's big enough to form an island, but didn't cause the extinction of everybody on Earth when it crashed into Earth.
I don't know. Okay.
Not a lot of scientific research done on this story, but I love the way that they make it look like a meteor. You know, it's got all these little frickin' craters on
it. Circle craters. Yeah.
So anyway, they get to the meteor and immediately Jepson attacks Lois. She runs from him, and that's where she comes up against these men in the metal suits and the strange, I don't know if you'd want to call them gas mask like face plates. They got goggles, but then these little tubes that come out for their mouths. They're really strange looking. And I don't think we ever really learn why they're wearing them, except for maybe because of the radiation that's coming off of the.
Well, okay.
But they wear them in the lab as well, which is 100 miles away. So I don't know.
That's what you would think, perhaps. It must be some sort of radiation suit. But there's never any talk of any radiation. The only radiation that we know of is magnetic force. I'm like, so do they wear the suits that make them magnetic neutral so that the magnetic waves don't affect them while they're walking around or whatever?
I don't know. It's just like I guess it's their stormtrooper outfits, basically.
We don't know. The we don't knows are piling up rather rapidly here so far. It's,
yeah. And the only reason I brought up that they might be gas masks is only because of the visuals here on the page where they're chasing her around this island, because there appears to be a cloud of smoke in the background, but it's never referenced. She does pass out, but it's they distinctly say that she faints.
Right.
So I just assumed before I started reading that they popped, you know, like some kind of gas canister. And, you know, if there was no text at all on this page, you would assume that they gassed her and that's why she passed out. Mm-hmm. But no, it's just a artistic choice for the background, I guess. And she passes out and Jepson gets on his radio to report in that Lois Lane has been captured. And then we see the mysterious bad guy say, "Indeed. Then it only remains for us to remove Clark Kent." Let me ask you this before we go any further. There's a point in this story where somebody references the leader saying that he is a genius.
Mm-hmm.
Did you assume that it was going to turn out to be a certain somebody?
I thought, yeah. I was like, oh, cool. That'll be cool if, you know, this is the comeback for that character.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why we're dancing around it, but yeah, Luther. I thought it was Luther.
That was going to be
cool.
And
if not Luther, maybe somehow the ultra humanite has come back.
Okay.
But no. Very disappointing.
Not even when remote references to either one. It's, yeah.
No. It turns out to be basically nobody.
Yep.
This guy. But so then we go to Clark Kent. He arrives in Rovertown. As soon as he gets off the train, a kid, a little messenger boy, starts calling out, "Message for Clark Kent. Message for Mr. Kent." Clark's like, I'll take that message, boy, is what he tells the kid. Mm-hmm. And he finds that the message is blank. But then we get this crazy panel of some stranger with these intense, crazy eyes. It's supposed to represent this is a guy in the crowd who now knows that's Clark Kent. But again, without text, I would assume he's trying to hypnotize somebody.
Something. Yeah, maybe he's putting a whammy on Clark to follow him better or something.
The intensity in that face and those eyes and the motion lines coming off the eyes and the almost energetic yellow color that's coming off of the face looks like he's doing the whammy on somebody.
Now, you said crazy eyes. The narrator tells us they are enigmatic eyes. Enigmatic, yeah.
Same thing. Enigmatic is the rich person's crazy.
Is that what? Okay, it's a synonym for crazy. Okay.
Yeah. If you've got money, you're not crazy. You're enigmatic. You're mysterious.
All right.
The Superman Super Show will return after these messages. And now, back to the Superman Super Show.
The laboratory is within walking distance of the train station, so Clark sets off to walk, when suddenly an airplane swoops out of the sky and starts shooting at Clark. Clark, you know, of course, being Superman, it's not going to hurt him, but he has to pretend that he is running for his life, and he yells, "Help!" And he runs to the lab. He runs to the front door. He starts beating on the front door. "Open, please open the door." This was the moment when, as I'm sitting here thinking, this story is freaking crazy, then this happens. And I went, holy shit, they just took it to a whole new level.
Yeah, no doubt.
He's pounding on the doors. The doors open sideways like an elevator. They open up just enough for somebody to stick their hand through the opening. They've got a pistol in their hand. They shoot Clark, and then the doors close. But that's not the crazy part. The crazy part is Clark goes, "Huh," and starts knocking on the door again.
Yep.
Somebody else answers the door, and they're like, "I heard a shot. Were you harmed?" And Clark's like, "Just let me in, and I'll let you know." And so when he gets inside, he's like, "Oh, yeah, the door opened, and somebody took a shot at me, but they missed." And the guy's like, "Wow, that's crazy." I don't understand what's going on.
Nope.
I don't understand. Because within moments, knock, 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 shot, 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 knock, knock, knock.
Yeah.
Oh, is there somebody out here shooting?
Did somebody shoot at you?
I surely probably passed them at the door, but no. So, yeah. Clark's now in the lab. I think this guy is... Oh, no. Okay, so this guy is Krall.
Krall. Mm-hmm.
Lamson's assistant. K-R-A-W-L. And he meets Lamson, and then suddenly the airplane is back, and Clark runs off, changes into Superman. The airplane lands outside the laboratory. The dudes in the metal suits come out. They come bursting in. We want the W-142 formula. And the Lamson's like, no. What are you going to do? Kill me?
No.
You're not going to get it if you kill me. So there's really nothing you can do. I mean, they could torture him, I suppose. But so they go, oh, all right. Well, we'll just work on somebody else. And I guess that's Krall. Krall they go up to?
I think so. Yeah. It's the only two men, I think, that are there. So.
Yeah. But Krall was, well, he wasn't fully bald. Anyway, the guy turns his gun around and threatens to bash the dude's head in with his gun. The butt of his gun, if he doesn't tell him where the formula is. And it's just there in the cabinet drawer. They didn't even need to threaten anybody. They just needed to start opening drawers and they would have found it.
Well, see, now that does look like Lanson.
It does. Yeah.
With the,
so maybe they're like
the suit and the hair. So they're going to shoot him. And he's like, no, shooting doesn't scare me. Well, then we'll bash your head in. Okay, that scares me. And he tells
That's really the only explanation here, because they do mention when he's like, you're not going to get anything out of me. You're wasting your time. One of them says, I believe him. Let's work on someone else. But then I guess the other guy's like, no, screw this. I'm going to bash your freaking head in.
We're not
if
done
you don't
with
tell
this
us
dude.
Where the formula is.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, it's there in the drawer, which, again, all they had to do was just start opening random drawers and they would have found it.
Toss in the office and they would have found what they're looking for.
Yeah, it's not in a hidden safe. It's not hidden anywhere. It's just casually tossed in a cabinet drawer. But it's at that point that Superman bursts in. He manhandles him. He throws him around. But then they switch on this weapon that is in the airplane but controls the magnetism in the room that they're in. And it basically makes every metal object in the room fly at Superman. Superman realizes that the machine that's doing this must be in the airplane. So he picks up a huge metal bench, throws it through the window. It destroys the plane. Machine is now turned off. No more magnet stuff. So that's when Krall decides that he's going to jump out the window. And Superman goes to save him.
That was not a very well-drawn airplane, by the way.
No, not at all. Not at all.
That was yucky.
Yeah. Superman goes to save him, which just involves Superman getting to the ground first and catching him. Because really, as long as you're caught in a pair of arms and you don't hit the ground, you're going to be fine.
Right. You're safe. Yeah.
Yeah. But the guy swallows poison. On the way down, he swallows poison. And he tells Superman, it doesn't matter. I swallowed the poison. So Superman, tell me who your real employer is. And that's when he says, a man of gigantic intelligence. Mm-hmm. You'll never outwit him. And that made me and Ed,
yes,
and probably everyone reading this story for the first time go, yeah, Luther's back.
It's kind of exciting there, yeah.
Yeah. So Superman leaps into the air and through a series of mighty leaps spanning hundreds of miles. Yeah, which,
because
he's only 100 miles away.
He can't fly, so.
Yeah, he can't. But while he's in one of his leaps, he looks down and he sees the metal-clad men. And so he decides that's where he needs to land. So while he's in midair, he manages to land next to those guys. He beats them up. He finds out that there's an underground hideout. He burrows down, breaks into the room, meets the leader who turns on another one of those magnet machines, causing the whole room basically to implode.
Mm-hmm.
But Superman fights his way out, saves Lois, and Jepson survives, Tom Jepson, but the leader does not. So we get in one word balloon who the leader was. Who is your boss? Superman asks Jepson, and he says, a foreign agent who was determined to get the W-142 formula at any cost. And I should probably back up. They did explain what the W-142 formula was, and it's an energy source that would basically make it so you could get, what was it, like the same amount of energy you would get out of 1 million pounds of coal?
5 million.
Come out of 5 million pounds of coal.
Right.
Come out of just one piece of coal.
One pound of this W142, one pound
yeah.
would produce the amount of energy that 5 million pounds of coal yes. would.
Yes. And so they take Jepson. Superman takes Lois and Jepson back to Metropolis. They find Sergeant Casey, who's now our reoccurring police officer mm-hmm. in Metropolis, and hand him over. Said, I got a prisoner for you. And Casey's like, what? And Lois is like, hold on to him, Casey. I'll explain everything to you later. And then we get our last two panels at the Daily Planet. Lois is really excited because she's got this great story. She turns it in and finds out, oh, sorry, we already have the story. And she looks at the front page and sees that it was my story under the byline of Clark Kent. That's the last panel of the page. Clark is now poking his head into the office through the doorway. And he says, paging me, Lois? And that's the end.
He's got to know that constantly right. doing things like that is not going to make her like him on top of any other right. reason that she might yeah. not like him.
And he does actually, when y'all get to the next episode, we talk about the fourth story in this Superman issue. He kind of talks about that just slightly, mm-hmm. but it's more about him being Superman, but we'll get there. They don't really tell us how the meteor in Swayze Swamp tied into any of this, did they?
No. Maybe the meteor has been there for like a long time and it was just a discovery rather than something that recently fell.
And were the bad guys using the meteor at some point as a home base, Meteor Island? I don't understand.
I guess so, because all of them came from there.
Yeah, that's true.
Any reference came from the meteor. The dudes wearing the suits that we saw at the meteor attacked the laboratories. They were dressed the same, so they must have come from there. Now, I would like to know how they managed to get to the plane dressed like that, because the meteor is in the middle of a swamp. A plane is not going to take off from a swamp. They're on land somewhere at a runway, you know, whatever. So yeah. these dudes like just transport in these outfits and then they just climb aboard their plane in the hangar and take the plane. I mean,
you're just speechless.
There were just so many, you know, the meteor. Why are they dressed in the suit? The plane. Yeah. The plane attacks him, which you thought Clark, him being Clark. You thought, well, that's what they're doing. They're looking for Clark to kill him. But no, actually, they were coming to land to dispatch people to go try to find this formula. Trying to kill Clark was just a plus at the time. They just happened yeah. to see him. And so it's not a regular plane, right, that you would just go from point A to point B. No, it's a fighter plane that can shoot.
Right.
And so yeah. that's what they're doing to travel across our country in 1941 without interference. We'll call it a Spitfire. Just zoom in the farmlands of, you know, wherever between Lampson Labs and Swayze Swamp is this fighter plane. And nobody cares in 1941 that it, yeah. So
yeah, and they're strafing American citizens.
Yeah. Now I thought it was kind of interesting at the beginning, and we can't now, but it would be interesting for me to ask the writer, why did one of our duo go by bus and one by train? Is there a reason that you did both, or is that significant? Was one closer and so you could travel there by bus, whereas the one that was farther away, you went by train because it would be quicker? Or
who took the bus?
Lois or Clark took the bus. Lois took the train. So, you know, I thought it was curious that they used two different methods of transportation. But now, yeah. you know, now that I say that, we see a train, we see a bus, we see a plane, we see a boat, we see walking. Clark walked. I'm not sure there was any method of transportation in 1941 that was left out. Horse. Yeah. Nobody rode a horse, I guess. But you've got two settings. You split up our duo, and then you bring them together at one of the settings, and you find out the connection between the two settings. And it was a very complex story.
It I don't know what I was going to say. I had something I was going to say, and it makes you wonder if they had been able to turn this into a 22-page story, if all those questions would have been answered.
Who knows? I mean, maybe they wrote it and they didn't have it answered to begin with. So 22 more pages wouldn't have, or I mean, a full 22 pages wouldn't have given you answers because they didn't plan to give you any.
Yeah.
They would have just fleshed out a little bit, you know, I don't know. So something probably would have been answered with more room, but I don't think everything. To me, the biggest question I have is, why were they wearing those outfits at the meteor?
Why are they wearing the outfits at all?
Yeah, I don't just to.
I mean, if the leader was wearing a similar outfit,
right?
Or even like a Darth Vader versus stormtroopers, you know, you get why the stormtroopers are wearing those clothes because they're uniforms,
right? Right.
So are these uniforms for his soldiers? They don't explain it. They don't refer to those guys as anything but metal clad men or something,
right.
And so. You know, if he would have even just put in something like the soldiers in their bizarre metal uniforms, then I would have been like, okay, that's what the soldiers wear.
It's their uniform, right?
Yeah, but
the magnetic stuff, did it have anything to do with the meteor? Did they find it because of the meteor, or did the meteor hide the fact that they were doing these maybe experiments with magnetics? Or yeah,
I just don't know. That makes sense, but
Just
give us a couple of breadcrumbs, Jerry. Come on.
You know, they dug out an underground base under the meteor. Okay.
Yeah.
In a swamp, I could understand. No, nobody's going to mess with them in a swamp. So, okay, that kind of makes sense. Was the fact that it was underneath the meteor, did the meteor have something to do with that? Were they doing something with the meteor and they made their base there?
I mean, I guess if you're going to make a base underground, it's kind of hard to do in a swamp. So the meteor island left them a place to actually make an underground layer in. But
could be.
Yeah. There's really a lot left up to the reader's imagination in this story.
Yes. This would be a really good story for a contemporary writer to go back and retcon and fill in some of these answers as far as, you know, one of Superman's earliest adventures and some kind of connection to today. And go back and look between the panels and fill in some of these spaces.
That would be fun.
It's just, wow. Yeah.
You could. Now, this is one of those, you know, we make the joke all the time. What would a modern writer do with this story? They'd probably turn it into 6 issues and be all blah, blah, blah. This could easily be made into a 6-issue story.
Absolutely.
And still be full of adventure and fun.
Yeah. Because there are so many questions from this one that additional books could easily fill in. Yeah.
Yep. And here's something that I'm wondering, you know, I don't know if it's happened yet, but I know that we were getting close to this version of Superman falling under the Creative Commons, you know, the
as far
trademark
as
running out
what
of something.
He can do and the way he looks. And
I'm wondering if anybody now could tell this story.
I was going to say, they could latch onto this and retell this. Maybe. I don't know if you could. Because I don't understand completely how the particular copyright works. It could be that the story you can't mess with, but some of the concepts you can, because I know that, you know, a lot of people were like, oh, well, that means, and people with knowledge would step in and say, no, you know, basically it involves the likeness of Superman, the S shield on this particular version, his powers.
Yep.
I don't think you could use Clark Kent. I don't think you can use Lois Lane, things like that, because those copyrights carry over. So you couldn't refer to him as the Man of Steel, I don't think, because that's come up several times. You certainly couldn't use the word Superman. So, you know, but good fun. And after the first two stories in this issue, to then open up the book and keep going with this story. This is an excellent issue of Superman so far.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, and this does tie into this issue or this story. You used to watch G.I. Joe back in the 80s, right?
The cartoon, yes.
Have you watched it recently? Have you gone back and done any kind of rewatches?
No.
So the thing about G.I. Joe is that I never really noticed it as a kid, but watching it again as an adult, that show is just full of music.
Mm-hmm.
There's always background music being played. And there's a certain bit of background music that's played during some of the more action-packed scenes.
Okay.
It's like this, just this really bombastic, exciting music. And reading this issue, that music could have been played almost throughout the entire issue.
Yep.
Because it's just, there's just so much action from page one on. It's just, and it's with G.I. Joe, it's almost overwhelming at times in the background. It's like, I can't even concentrate on the action because the music is so intense.
Too much input.
And yeah, that's kind of what I feel like with this issue. It was a freaking ball. And I don't want to go on record as saying this is my favorite Superman story so far from the beginning. I don't even want to go on the record as saying this is the single craziest Superman so far, because I'm having memories of the story about the orphanage and Superman chasing the guy in the basement and all the crazy stuff.
The underground torture, whatever that was. Yeah.
So I almost have to go back and read that one and go, which one was the crazier story? But this one might win because it was easily
among the most crazy. And there's no problem saying it's among your favorite so far or something like that.
Yes.
You know, at least that way you don't have to like actually sit down and pick. You can just say,
right,
it's one of these three. It's one of the, you know, so yeah.
But just going from Clark walking to the lab from the bus depot, having a military fighter plane strafe
from
him
out of nowhere,
and him having to run to the lab and bang on the door for rescue, please, sanctuary, only for the doors to open up and a solitary hand holding a pistol comes out, shoots him point blank in the chest. And of course, being Superman, it doesn't hurt him, so he knocks on the door again. Somebody else is standing there. Was there a gunshot? You know, was
I heard shots.
I have to assume that was Krall was the guy who shot him,
I guess. And he's just playing off the fact that he did it. And I mean, did he actually think, if that was him, did he actually think at that range that he missed who it was out there? Or
right.
Yeah.
That's what I'm wondering is because, you know, he shoots him, closes the doors, and then Clark starts pounding on the door again. Is Krall like, what the flip? I just shot that guy. I'm really curious. I should probably open up the door. And he opens up the door and sees he's not shot. So what do I do? Was there a gun? Did I hear a gunshot? Yeah. That's
I'll just play it off and just keep going. And yeah, I don't know.
These are the stories that I love to talk about because there's just so they're crazy and there's so many questions that never get answered.
And for me, at this point in my comic book reading, I am perfectly okay with that. Now, once upon a time, it would have had to make sense and it would have had to maybe one or two questions about the overall story, not 15 questions throughout the story. I could not allow that at one point. But now I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
You know,
same thing, same way.
That's the way they wrote it. That was fun. Yeah. I wonder. They didn't answer. Okay. Moving on.
Yeah, 20, 30 years ago, I may have been like, this didn't make any sense. It's stupid.
It's stupid, man. Yeah.
Now it's just like, this didn't make any sense. It's stupid. I love it.
That's okay. That's okay.
Anything else you want to say about this
crazy story? I think I'm good. This was a lot of fun so far.
Okay. Yeah. this is the reason we do this show.
Yes.
Stories like that.
This is it. This is an example of why we are entertained by Golden Age Superman, this story.
All right, folks, that was one of the more craziest Superman tales in existence, well, since the beginning, at least. I'm sure there's some crazy stuff happening in the Silver Age.
Yeah, I think so. In a little bit different way, but just as crazy feeling.
Yeah, I think we've talked about that before. It's like, the craziness of the stories of the Silver Age were crazy on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, they're just trying to write a story.
Yeah.
And it just comes out crazy because they've only got 13 pages. And yeah.
Yeah, they've got
some of the concepts.
Two would have been, I guess. And two characters, and they've got to connect them, and 13 pages to do all that. So yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, let's wrap this sucker up. Until next week, folks, I am Steven. That's Ed. And this was the Superman Super Show.
Ciao, bye. Bella.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Superman Super Show. Questions and comments can be directed to thesupermansupershow@gmail.com. If you enjoyed the show, you can help to boost our presence online by leaving a rating or review on your favorite podcast app. The Superman Super Show is a presentation of Steven or Else Media. For more nerdy content just like this, check out stevenorelse.com or just use the link in your show notes. Superman is a registered trademark of DC Comics and was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.
Superman is a copyrighted feature appearing in Action Comics magazine.
Superman's bad. I mean, he was bad.
This just in, hot off the bench press. Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today, and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches, and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best-in-class equipment we've always had, with most clubs open 24 hours, so you can work out your way on your time. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends January 10th. See Home Club for details.